that aren't so familiar with the issues that Native youth face with STDs and other high-risk behavior. I'm just going to take just a few minutes to kind of give a little bit of background. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the efforts that are going on, but you're going to hear a lot more detail. Let me tell you who's going to be speaking now, and so I won't reintroduce you at the time. Is that okay? Okay, the first speaker is going to be Miss Jessica Leston, and Jessica is the program manager, the STD program manager for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in Anchorage, Alaska. And the second speaker is Miss Stephanie Craig, soon to be Dr. Stephanie Craig. just Stephanie. And she is the project director for Project Red Talon at the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board in Portland, Oregon. And then I'm gonna speak about Native Stand. And then Tracy Rector, who is the executive director and co-founder of Longhouse Media Native Lens, based in Seattle, will wrap it up. And then I think we'll have a lot of time to talk. Okay. All right, that's left over from another conference, sorry. Okay, so you know, I have preteens or teens, and I know some of you have teens, and you know, when we hear about teenagers or you think about, you know, Native youth or any kind of youth, you tend to kind of go to the dark side, and there's so many, there's so much popular culture about youth. You know, insanity is hereditary. You get it from your children. You know, few things are more satisfying than seeing your own children have teenagers of their own. Adolescence is a period of rapid changes between the ages of 12 and 17. For example, a parent ages as much as 20 years. Mother Nature is providential. She gives us 12 years to develop love for our children before turning them into teenagers. The troubles of adolescence eventually all go away. It's just like a really bad, long cold. At 14, you don't need sickness or death for tragedy. Telling a teenager the facts of life is like giving a fish a bath. So, you know, we have all this kind of like popular culture about teens and how difficult they are. But there's really a wonderful side to working with adolescents. And especially, you know, there's some really great activities going on with Native youth that you're going to hear some about. And especially Tracy is going to talk about her experience working with Native youth and, you know, what kind of gifts they bring to the process. So, you know, teens are, they're loyal and they're funny and they're curious and they're opinionated, they're confident, they're loving, they want to express their individual style, they're passionate about things, they're empathetic. You know, there's a lot of really great things about teens. And I just have to print this out and take it home with me when I get off the plane to make sure I remember all these things, right? Teens are cool. So I want to talk a little bit about, as most of you are maybe familiar with the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance, or the YRBS, which is a national school-based survey conducted by CDC about many different youth risk behaviors. And there are some state and local surveys, it's mostly state. If you go on the Division of Adolescent School Health has a really cool website. They're the ones who are in charge of the youth risk behavior surveillance. And there's a really nice website where you can download the variables you want and the ages you want and the different risk factors you want. It'll, you know, give you some nice information, but it doesn't have information about Native Americans as a race. So it has white, black, and other, I think. Mary, I'm looking at you. I don't know. but a few tribes have individually done a YRBS, including the Navajo Nation, and also the Bureau of, what's now the Bureau of Indian Education, has also done, and that's a federal agency that oversees many federal activities on Indian lands, including some of the education, and they've done some BIA YRBS. So we have a little bit of data to show, but I just want to give a caveat that it's not representative of all Native youth. It's just the best we have to share. So with that in mind, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the kinds of risks that, risk behavior that Native youth have. The first I just want to talk about, I just kind of want to build up, is unintentional injury and violence. For instance, one of the questions on the YRBS is rarely or never wore seatbelts. So this is 2003 and 2005 data, where the Navajo and the BIA is from 2003. So just to kind of give that caveat, you can see BIA has a lot, you know, higher percent. Well, they're very, very rural. They're on reservation settings. I can probably, you know, you can see that maybe people don't always wear their seatbelts. But Navajo is a, but you know, Navajo, same thing. It's very rural, and they have more in line with the U.S. So drove after drinking alcohol in the past month. Again, you can see, you know, Navajo is not so much higher than the national. And Arizona and New Mexico, these are native youth in Arizona and New Mexico, because if you go to that state's webpage, they give you the racial breakdown, even though the federal one doesn't at CDC. Rode with a drinking driver in the past month, in a physical fight in the past year. Suicide thoughts and attempts. So this is considered and attempted. And this is a really big problem in Indian country for our youth. Very, very high rates of attempted suicides, you know, not just contemplating, but carrying it through. Drug and alcohol use. If you look at marijuana past month, cocaine, huffing, and meth, you can see that there are very high rates of marijuana use among Native youth and all youth, and also pretty high among cocaine. And then, you know, the meth is pretty high. The Navajo didn't ask the question about meth, so there's no data for that one. Alcohol use past month, pretty similar on the drink in the past month. So we get to sexual risk behaviors. Ever had sex? Currently sexually active. So that's in the past 30 days, I think, or more than 4 sexual partners in a lifetime. No condom used at last sex. So some of the things we're doing, you know, there aren't a lot of interventions out there that are developed for Native youth. You know, there are a lot of different interventions for youth, but not specific for Native youth. And so we start thinking about, well, what are some prevention efforts we can do in Indian country? Some of the things we've looked at are doing, for instance, school-based STD screening, some peer education that I'll talk more about later, and also comprehensive risk assessments with tailored screening and education. And that's really what the Pine Ridge model is doing, is they're having a comprehensive risk assessment, and then they're having a one-on-one discussion with each student individually about their individualized risk and coming up with a risk plan for that student. So I'm sorry you're not going to hear more about that. But so several years ago, my colleague Scott Tulloch, who is also a CDC assignee, also assigned to Indian Health Service in Albuquerque, we started thinking about wanting, you know, it was when all the stuff from the Philadelphia model was coming out about the successes of school-based screening and, you know, the whole brown bag, paper cup, you know, how you could kind of get around some of those confidentiality and stigma issues. And we wanted to know, were the existing screening guidelines relevant for Indian country, or did we need to issue our own variation of those guidelines? So we sat down with a work group and we looked through them, and we decided, yeah, we probably, it's different enough that we would want to fine tune it. So I contacted ETR, who were the original developers of the school-based screening guidelines. And they were very nice. They were like, yeah, take it, do whatever you want with it. So we revised the guidelines, and these are available. I have a whole box of hard copies in my desk that I'd love to get rid of, or it's also available online at the IHS STD website, but also at the Project Great Howland website, which is a great website to check out anyway. And it's also on, no, it's not, okay, no, all right, okay. So this kind of goes through step by step how you would go about doing school-based screening, whether you were, you know, whether you were a teacher or you were somebody in the community or somebody from IHS, you know, what are the steps you would need to go through? So they were published in 2007. As I said, they were adapted from ETR's guidelines. They have several results of early screening efforts. We've actually had a lot more success since then, mostly thanks to Stephanie in the Northwest Portland area. She's worked with several schools there to implement school-based screening. There are a lot of challenges to doing school-based STD screening. We worked, I don't know how many years, on Navajo to try and implement a school-based screening, and it's just so complex. To identify and engage and retain a local champion, and to navigate the approval process, it's very complex. There's, you know, you have to have the school board approval, you have to have the school director approval, you have to have the chapter house, which is like the county approval, and then you have to have the, you know, the area. It's just crazy, you know. By the time you get it all, somebody else left, and you have to go back and re-explain it to them, and it's, you know, it's just very hard to get everybody at the same place at the same time and get it all where you need to get it. Very difficult to identify the lab. I mean, there is a lab, there's an IHS lab, but they're understaffed, they're underfunded, they're overworked, they, you know, may or may not see the value in doing it, and you know, how are we going to get reimbursed, and where are those funds going to come from? Even though their, you know, their mandate is to provide healthcare services for the people in that part of the Navajo Nation, it just comes down to money. IHS is a very, very underfunded, broken system. And then working around school calendars, you know, you finally get everything you need, and then like they go on summer break, and you're like, oh, now we have to wait 3 months, you know, till they come back. And so it's just, you know, it's those kind of issues that would be the same working in other schools also, those kind of logistical issues. So just, this is an update, this is from a year ago, so there's probably more of an update than this, but we've done screening in some off-reservation boarding schools, some on-reservation, this was an on-reservation public high school. You can see the numbers are very small. On-reservation tribal school in the Northern Plains, 13% of the students had chlamydia, gonorrhea, or both. 24% of the seniors and alternative students had chlamydia, gonorrhea, or both. And then on an on-reservation boarding school in the Southwest, you know, they screened 48 middle and high school girls, and there were no cases of chlamydia or gonorrhea. So we were like, you know, it's kind of like the worst case scenario. You finally get approval to do a chlamydia screening project, and then there's no chlamydia. It's like, oh, we should have spiked it or something. I mean, this is because you know it's there. And, you know, you don't wish illness on anybody, but you want to be able to show that this is a really valuable service. And so it's had its frustrations getting school-based screening going.